This podcast contains content that may be disturbing to some listeners. Check the episode description for more details and resources. And as always, take care of yourself.
The first thing you are aware of is a taste of seawater and vomit burning inside of your mouth. Then, the voice is whispering overhead. Not whispering, it just sounds that way as you come back to yourself. Soon you realize they are speaking, then shouting. You recognize the movement then of being in a car, no, an ambulance. Under the shouting voices, you hear a siren blaring. You feel the IV snaking their way along your arms and hear the humming of machines you've come to associate with pregnancy and birth. This is your last thought before you black out again. You surface again in the hospital and panic for a moment when you think you're about to hear the news again, that your son has died and there's nothing you can do to save him. Everything looks the same. Zora to your right, sleeping fitfully on a metal chair. The tubes that bring fluids to your arms. How did they rescue you? You will later learn that when you washed up on shore, one of those drugged-up teens risked arrest to call 911. When Zora opens her eyes and sees you are awake, neither of you says anything. There is nothing to say. Well, you could say you're sorry, but your wife is perceptive and is already anticipating the lie. Instead, you communicate with a look. You tell her you love her.
I know. I love you too.
That you never wanted to hurt her.
I know that.
What now? Finally, you do speak. Where is Marina?
She's with Aaron. My parents are coming up too, to help.
To help? That must be the first time it clicks, that you are not going home. Your eyes fill with tears and you turn away from Zora. She puts a hand on your arm. You bury your head in the flimsy hospital pillow beneath your head and will sleep to come. I shut the laptop when I saw Talia walk in across the cafe. We'd been best friends in high school and reconnected after she moved back to New York after grad school. She was beautiful, in a beige top and high necklace I'd gotten for her big 18th a million years ago. She saw me at the table in the back and nearly ran to me. I stood as she got closer and she enveloped me in her arms.
I'm so glad to see you. How are you?
I mean, you know, been better, been worse.
Oh yeah, for sure, but really, I'm glad you're okay.
I would have liked to see you. You know, if you had come to the hospital. Just once.
I really should have. It was really hard to think of you like that. It's not an excuse. I'm gonna get coffee. Want anything?
I held up my latte and shook my head. Talia left to go get her coffee. She came back after a minute and said,
"So, have you heard the news about Madison?"
"Who?"
"Madison Carver. She took bio with us like freshman year of high school."
I still wasn't entirely sure who she was talking about, but she went into the details about Madison getting addicted to opiates after a car accident and having a meltdown and going to rehab. She heard it from an old friend who saw it on Facebook.
Isn't that awful?
Is she okay now?
I'm not sure. That's all I know.
Can I ask why Krishna?
It was my fourth appointment with Rosa, and she still hadn't read my letter. But we had talked about it, and she got the gist.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I just meant you could choose to write to anyone. Why her?
Oh. I guess she's someone I haven't spoken to in a while. It's easy when the relationship is, well, complete, you know?
Still, I'm sure there are a lot of people you don't talk to anymore. You only knew her for 3 dates a long time ago.
I feel guilty, I guess. Not just with her, but she's the one that I think deserved getting ghosted the least.
Even if it was wrong to never message her back, you know you couldn't have helped the anxiety, right?
I mean, yeah.
I know you know, but you still feel like it's your fault, don't you?
Yeah, maybe. I guess I feel guilty. For a lot.
What do you mean?
My friends and family, mostly. My brother Aaron came by last week, and he mentioned, you know, that it's scary to see me in, I guess in a bad way. Which, of course, it is. I can't be upset that he feels that way.
Why does that make you feel guilty?
I don't want him to be in pain because of me. Because of something I should be able to control. That came out wrong. I meant because of something I want to be able to control.
Sadie, your mom came to see you in the hospital, right?
A bunch of times.
How did she react?
She cried. She said she couldn't stand to see me in pain. She asked me to get better.
Like it was something you can't control.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Yeah. I guess that makes me feel guilty.
Have you ever told her this?
Honestly, I'm kind of realizing this right now.
Well, that's therapy for you.
It's all that and my friend Kim. She has cancer. She's gone through this 3 times already, and I guess I feel weird that I wanted to end my life when she's fighting so hard for hers.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you don't mind me asking, what kind of cancer?
Leukemia.
That's blood, right?
And bone marrow.
So you wouldn't tell your friend that she isn't sick because it's only her blood and bone marrow, right?
That doesn't make sense.
So why are you less sick because your disease is in your brain?
I guess this is why I'm paying you, huh?
Actually, your insurance is pretty good. You're not paying me much.
How do you deal with her? You ask Aaron this one day after you've cut Kate out like a cyst. You try not to think about her often, but sometimes you can't help it. This is one of those times. He takes a moment, thinks about it. Eventually, he says,
"She's my mom.
She doesn't respect us."
"I know."
"So?"
"I can't not have her around. You know what I mean? I'm not like you. You're independent, strong. I've never been okay with being alone."
"You have never considered yourself strong before. You suppose not everyone could have made the decision you did, but what was the alternative? You can't keep Kate in your life. Not like this. You might explode." "I'm not strong," you say, and Aaron shakes his head.
"I think you're too strong. That's why it's so hard when you have to fight against your own brain."
"I'm glad it's helping."
"Really? Thank you for referring me."
I'd driven out to Jersey for the day while Zora was at work, needing a break from my computer screen. She'd drop Marina off on her way into work, and I would be back in time to pick her up. I owe them both that much. Terry and I sat in the living room, me on the chair and him on the matching couch. His and Kim's house was small, one floor, with exposed brick and hardwood floors and all that other stuff that couples were supposed to look for when they bought a home.
"Anytime. How's Marina doing?"
"She seems okay. She's adjusting still, I think. I mean, it sucks to go through this, but the part I honestly hate about this most is that I'm dragging her through it, too."
"I've thought a lot about that."
Terry glanced backwards towards the bedroom where Kim was asleep. She'd had chemo the day before. He turned back to me and said,
"We both wanted to have kids when we got together."
"Why didn't you?" "You don't have to answer that if you don't want to."
"No, I brought it up for a reason. Kim couldn't get pregnant after, you know, all the drugs. And none of the adoption agencies would give us a kid because..."
"Because Kim had been sick. I had no idea."
"Why would you? I just think about it now, and would this all be so much worse if we had a kid?"
"Honestly, I can't say."
We both looked up when the door to Kim and Terry's room opened. Kim came down the hallway, stretching. Her eyes were just a little bit bloodshot.
"You missed chemo."
"I'll have to come next time. Can't have you having such a good time without me."
"Of course."
Kim sat down next to Terry on their couch, and he put his arm around her. She leaned into him and put her head on his shoulder.
"I'm tired."
"Your body is going through a lot."
She turned to look at me.
"Did you meet Rodney last time? He's an old guy who does chemo at the same time as me. I'll introduce you."
"Can't wait."
"Can I get you something?"
You want to make tea?"
"Sounds good. Food?"
"Yeah."
"Okay."
He kissed her forehead and got up, and Kim pulled her sweatshirt tighter around herself. She sat back against the cushions, facing me again.
"How are you doing?"
"I'm okay."
"Don't pull that bullshit with me. How are you?"
"You were right. It was kind of homework. But I think it's the good kind. It's really hard, but like, cathartic, too."
"Good. I'm glad you're getting something out of nerd therapy."
"You could be less of a jerk, you know?"
"I could. I won't, but I could."
"You can't change her."
"You wouldn't want to."